It's never been easier to be a cynic. You listen to the news and war is everywhere. You drive to work burning through a shockingly expensive tank of fuel and sit down at your desk hoping today is not the day your AI assistant replaces you. And a new poll from the Australian National University says most of you think life was better 50 years ago. Objectively, it's kind of bleak out here, but does that mean that optimism is dead? If your answer is yes, there is someone I want you to meet because he's got some views about why hope isn't about ignoring reality and why optimism doesn't have to mean being naive. Because it turns out being cynical doesn't make you smarter and expecting the worst might actually be holding us back. With me is Dr. Tim Sharp, a specialist in positive psychology and founder of the Happiness Institute. Tim, what's bringing you a bit of joy this morning?
Talking to you on the radio.
Perfect answer.
Looking out my window and seeing some beautiful trees and a sunny sky after what was a cloudy morning.
Fair enough. So you literally run an organization based on happiness. How does that play out for you in your personal life?
That's a good question. Let me divide that into two bits. Firstly, the Happiness Institute, despite its name, which is a little bit misleading, is not solely about happiness. It's really more about what positive psychologists call thriving and flourishing. Now, that includes positive emotions like happiness and joy and satisfaction, but it's also about meaning and connection and, a deeper sense of life satisfaction rather than just the fleeting, feeling good emotions that we sometimes have. So, as I said, the Happiness Institute's name is a little bit misleading, but it's a catchy title that people seem to like. In my personal life, to be honest, I've spent most of my life experiencing relatively severe mental ill health. So I experienced depression on and off most of my life. So I guess I teach what I need to learn myself. So I've been practicing this for several decades now, trying to overcome my own negative emotions and try to help other people at the same time.
That's pretty full on, Tim. I don't want you to have to bare your whole soul on the radio if you don't want to. But what sorts of techniques have you found are most effective?
The simple answer is the techniques that have been proven by the science. And that might sound a bit obvious for someone like me to say as an expert and professional and ex-academic in this area. But really, the good news is that positive psychology, and actually before that, clinical psychology, has developed for over, 60 or 70 years now, some very, very effective tools and some relatively easy things for people to learn. So starting off back in the, a bit before my time, I suppose, the original behavioral psychology and then particularly the cognitive behavioral techniques, which then emerged into sort of more modern cognitive behavioral and mindfulness-based and ACT-based therapies, have been and continue to be very, very effective for most people most of the time. There's no miracles, there's no easy, magic wand. But if most of us sort of work hard at learning these proven techniques and practice them and continue to work on them each and every day, they will help most of us feel better most of the time. And then more recently, in the last decade or two, positive psychology has taken that a step further and said, it's not just that we can sort of overcome or manage our depression or anxiety or whatever it might be, but we can also do things to boost our happiness, to thrive and flourish more rather than just being okay. So I guess I try to practice what I preach. And in very simple terms, these are things like the practice of gratitude, trying to connect more with loved ones, trying to do what for me is meaningful and purposeful, and that's been helping others.
So talk me through, you sort of mentioned these evidence-based things. I'd love to sort of maybe walk through a practical example of what one of them would look like. Talk to me about gratitude as a practice.
The simplest version of that that many of your listeners might have heard of is called a gratitude journal, or there's several versions of that, or the three good things exercise. So it's easy for us, and I'm guilty of this myself, fall into this trap myself, to get bogged down in the negative news cycle, which it's easier than ever now with social media and algorithms and the way they all work for those catastrophic headlines to overwhelm us and to overwhelm all of what we consume. And I'm not in any way suggesting those things or some of those things aren't real. As you said in the introduction, there are some pretty bad things happening. There are some very stressful things in all of our lives at the moment and have been for several years now. But that doesn't negate the fact that there are also good things happening in the world and good things happening in our world. So what a gratitude practice might look like, it'll vary for different people, but it's about actively searching for the good that's going on. It's about actively savoring what's going right in our lives. It's actively celebrating those people who make our lives feel a bit better and make the world a bit better. And we can do that by writing these, you know, writing, again, the three good things exercises. What are three good things that have happened today? So at the end of every day or towards the end of every day, if you just do that one simple thing, what are three good things? What are three things that went well today? The research suggests that will help. Now, again, it's not going to make everything magically, all the problems magically disappear, but it can help us feel a bit better. And if we feel a bit better, then we're more able to cope and more able to do more good.
You're listening to Life Matters here on ABC Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor talking to Dr. Tim Sharp, a specialist in positive psychology, the founder of the Happiness Institute. And he says that being informed doesn't have to be a one-way ticket to being depressed about the world, that we can instill hope and optimism even during times that feel pretty bleak sometimes. I'm asking you if there's hope that's spurred you to act, or what is a source of hope and optimism for you? Katrina says, for me, the wonder of David Attenborough's films and programs is that he always ends on a positive note. So clever, exposing problems but leaving viewers with hope. And Katie says, my 27-year-old son and his partner give me hope. This generation is smart, compassionate, generous, non-judgmental and deeply caring for people and the environment. They are the future. So, Tim, talk to me about how to blend optimism with being informed, that we're not sort of just wandering around naively hoping everything's going to be okay. What does that look like in action?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because optimism and hope, which are slightly different but similar constructs within within psychology, are two of the most important, arguably two of the most important constructs that contribute to not just happiness but well-being more generally, life satisfaction, and even things like longevity. You know, optimists actually live longer than pessimists. So these are super, super important, but they're also highly misunderstood. And the misunderstanding often lies in the fact that people think optimism is the same as positive thinking or what's sometimes called toxic positivity. And that's actually not helpful. Saying everything's fantastic, everything's all right, when in fact it's not, doesn't help. So what real optimists do, and this is a crucial, subtle but crucial difference, is real optimism and hope needs to be grounded in reality. So real optimists don't deny problems. They don't pretend everything's fine when it's not. They face up to the cold, hard realities, but, and this is an important bit, but they do it in a constructive way, or what psychologists sometimes call a solution-focused way. So it's saying, it's not necessarily saying everything's fantastic in the world. It's saying, okay, we do have some problems in the world and in my life, but what can I do about it? And so they focus on, that's another construct, related construct called locus of control. What can I do? What can I influence? And if each of us focus on what we can do, even if that's only a little bit, those little bits add up. You know, I can't change the world necessarily, but I can do a little bit in my part of the world. And if all of us do a little bit in our parts of the world, all those little bits of good add up to a lot of good. So again, the really important bit is being grounded in reality, but then taking a constructive solution-focused approach to that.
It's so interesting you say that. Eve has texted in basically saying the same thing in different words. Eve says, I'm trying to instill in myself more self-agency and self-sufficiency. It comes back to the Stoic philosophy of what is in my control. Well, Tim, there's this new poll out of the Australian National University that put some numbers around this general mood. It found most Australians think life was better 50 years ago. Do we know if that's true or not?
We do. It's a tricky one because it's actually far more complex than it might appear. And as wonderful as that research is, breaking it down or sort of presenting it in sort of simplistic headlines can be a little bit misleading. So the simple answer is yes and no. There really is a mix. So you know, over the long term, if we really look, not just 50 years, but 100 years, the reality is, for most of us, things are immeasurably better. We tend to be healthier. We tend to live longer, despite what it might feel like at the moment. Most of us are actually wealthier. We have more possessions, et cetera, et cetera. But, and again, this isn't about being unrealistically positive, there is a mix, and there are some very, very real acute strains and some very real, relatively recent stressors. And so things, particularly, I think, the things that are coming out in this and that have come out in other similar surveys are things like housing affordability, cost of living, inequality, wealth inequality, concern about the future, particularly things like the climate. So these things are very real, and they're a very real concern for a lot, particularly for younger people who are, again, being locked out of housing, et cetera, et cetera, and even the rental market. So again, it's a mix. There are some very real, very serious stressors, but they don't negate necessarily, they shouldn't necessarily negate the longer term gains, which are also quite real.
There's a text here that I want to put to you, Tim. One, this person says, I'm not sure I understand the gratitude thing. I do feel very grateful for a lot of things in my life, but I also feel guilty that I have more than others. How can I reconcile these two feelings?
Well, that's a very profound it's an emotionally intelligent question, I suppose, and something I've struggled with a lot. I mean, I've had a relatively privileged life, especially compared to several billion people in other parts of the world, and even several million people here in Australia. So I'm incredibly grateful for my life as well. But again, I relate to that question. I can also sometimes feel guilty about that. I guess that the response is that those things can be true at the same time. We can, and this is something that I don't think is talked about enough when in psychology and in these discussions, something I try to talk about a lot when in my work, is that we can experience mixed emotions. We can feel joy and sadness at the same time. We can feel gratitude and guilt at the same time. We can feel excitement and anxiety at the same time. Human emotions are very complex. And again, sometimes they're oversimplified for a variety of reasons, and that's not always helpful. So I suppose what I'd say to that person in the first instance is, that's okay. It's okay to have those dual, seemingly contradictory emotions at the same time. But what I'd also say is that for those of us that do feel grateful, for those of us that are privileged in whatever way, I don't just mean financially, I guess what we can look to do is use that for good. So how can this, I guess what I've tried to do in my life, how can I use my position and my privilege and the things in my life that are good to do more good for the world, to help more people? Other people might express that in other ways. But I think there's not necessarily any rational reason to feel guilty because we have a good life.
So if someone's listening to this chat and going, okay, I want to try this out, I want to try optimism, where do you suggest they start?
Another fantastic question. The starting point needs to be with awareness. And that might sound, I hope that doesn't sound too obvious or too glib, but the reality is each and every day, every one of us has literally thousands or tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of thoughts and emotions that just fly in and out of our mind and in and out of our emotional repertoire or whatever. And the reality is that most of us aren't aware of most of them. We don't necessarily know what we're thinking a lot of the time. We operate on automatic pilot. Now, that's not entirely a bad thing. That can be efficient. If we thought about every single thing we had to do, we'd kind of never get out of bed in the morning. We wouldn't be able to do up our shoelaces. So it's kind of okay to sort of operate mindlessly in that sense, but it's not always okay when it comes to some of the more complex or more important aspects of our life. So in answer to the question, the first thing is what we call mindfulness or awareness. And we can start to do that by stopping on a regular basis, several times a day, whenever you, as often as you can, and actually just asking ourselves, well, what's going through my mind at the moment? What am I thinking? What am I saying to myself? And so if we can access that, what some people call that inner dialogue or that self-talk, if we can access that, then we can actually start to know what's going on, and then we can actually start to question it and say, well, okay, and I'm kind of oversimplifying this here, but essentially, is this helping me or not? Mm. If it's overly and excessively pessimistic, if I'm just thinking about all the problems and all that's going wrong in my life, that's really not going to be helpful. It's just going to lead to me I'll be more depressed, and then I won't function as well. And if I don't function, then I get more depressed again, and that can then spiral down and down. And so the question then becomes is if my thoughts aren't helping me, well, are there any other thoughts? Are there any other ways I can think about things that might be more helpful? And again, this is a sort of sounding a bit simplistic, but if we can work through that process and practice it and get better and better at it, and it's a skill like any other skill, the more we practice it, the better you get, then if we can gradually start to think more helpful thoughts, then we will experience more positive emotions. And then at a very simple level, we will live a better life.
Well, Tim, thank you so much for sharing your insights today. Dr. Tim Sharp is a specialist in positive psychology and the founder of the Happiness Institute. And you've been telling me how you embrace positivity in the light of a world that can feel a little bit bleak sometimes. Martin says, 5 years ago, I regretfully cancelled my long-term subscription to a major international newspaper because on balance, it was just too much bad news. I do watch and listen to news daily, but also subscribe to sources like art and science journals, a good mix of what's going on in the world, what's going wrong in the world, and what's going right. Mary says, maintaining wholesome motivations and aspirations. Maintain your perspective on your small role in the enormity of nature and life. Maintain your good presence in the small sphere of your neighbourhood. Mary says, P.S., negativity is toxic and contagious.
Think bigger about the world we live in. Ask your smart speaker to play ABC RN.